And you all know about the bake sale, of course, and they've got some goodies. I think they're going at half price now, too. Perhaps. Anyway, I'd like to introduce our speaker. Please welcome Steve from San Diego. How do you do, Steve? Hi.
How you all are? I'm Steve, alcoholic. It's nice to be here, and I want to thank Tom for asking me to come here, and thanks for the wonderful dinner. That was a great dinner, and great coffee. Man, that was great coffee. I took a couple sips of that coffee, and I had an overpowering urge to go out and stand by the dumpster and wait for a hooker, you know what I mean? That's good stuff. There's something I like to do when I'm asked to speak, and it might be a little bit difficult tonight, but bear with me. Could you all please just stand up? Now go over and find somebody you don't know, and either hug them or shake their hand and tell them, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here, sir. Yeah. Happy birthday. I'm glad you're here, too. All right, thank you. Thank you for doing that. That's what AA is all about. One member of Alcoholics Anonymous reaching out and shaking the hand of another member or future member. That's what we do here. We help the drunks that come in here. And what a privilege it was to see the cakes that were given tonight. I know Larry personally, and it was in 91 when I was a little squirrely about midnight. I'd been married to my dear wife for about a year, and so I went over there and bitched about her. You know how we are. I'd like to talk a little bit about childhood. You know, I didn't have a happy childhood, but my God, it sure has been a long one. You know, you're never too old to relive your childhood. You know, and you see that all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the three newcomers that identified themselves and the ones that didn't. I'll tell you what I think the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous is. Number one, you got to be done drinking. You don't have to know you're done, but you got to be done. You got to be done drinking. And before you take step one, my friend David Looker up in Carlsbad says you got to take step zero. Step zero is this shit's got to end. And I can't make it end. I tried to make this end, and I cannot make it end. And somehow by the miracle and the grace of God, we end up in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you do all that stuff, then you're set to do this. Come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. It's not easy to come all the way in. What it means to come all the way in is all them secrets, all that information that you have that nobody's ever going to hear, all the dastardly things you did, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the lying, the cheating, the stealing. You got to bring it all in. And you got to sit down. Sit all the way down. and just stay here. Now, if you don't think there's some value in just staying here, talk to one of these people that got a cake tonight. That's what they did. They came all the way in, they sat all the way down, and they stayed. That's what I did. I have a home group. It's the Misfits Men's Book Study in Escondido. I have a sponsor, Sam S., lives in Carlsbad. He'll be sober 45 years in September. And my sobriety date is 10th of October, 1980. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I got sober by grace. Now, what grace, as I understand the definition of it, is it's a free gift that you don't deserve, you can't earn, and you can't buy at any price. And that's what I got. I got a free gift. I didn't deserve the grace of God, but that's His decision, not mine. You know, He had some stuff for me to do, apparently. And then there's that other little thing called mercy. You know, and I received the mercy of God. That means I don't get what I got coming. I get something free that I don't deserve, and I don't get what I got coming. And I didn't know that right away, of course. Over the years, I've discovered that to be the truth. I got sober in Lemon Grove, California, at the Alano Club there, sometimes referred to as the cradle of civilized AA. The people that are laughing have been there at the noon meeting, I can tell. And a gentleman named Noel Confer brought me to this meeting within my first week of sobriety. And I met a guy named Father Bill Wilson. Yep. He introduced himself as Bill Wilson. I said, oh God, the guy came up from the dead, you know. a very wonderful man. Heard a lot of fifth steps because he was a priest. And you can't make a priest confess what you confessed. So he did a lot of fifth steps. anyway, I arrived in tattered, awful, awful shape. I had a body that could not metabolize alcohol. I could not metabolize alcohol. I had a mind that was always on the way to the liquor store, and God had the job I wanted. And that's a bad way to show up here, you know. I nevertheless went to a meeting every day because that's what they said. It said if you drank every day, go to a meeting every day. And so I went to a meeting every day. And I heard some things back then that seemed real cool. By the way, before I came to AA, I had a real, when I first arrived here, I had a really terrific story. It wasn't a true story, but it was my story. And I've always kind of been a monkey see, monkey do kind of guy. And I'd see somebody do something, I'd start doing it. And if I thought they were cool and they were doing this, then I'd do it so I could be cool. And I was doing all the judging of what was cool and what wasn't cool, and it just didn't quite work out very well. It got me on a little tin chair on up at the Pathfinder Service Center on 30th Street in San Diego there. And let me tell you, A couple days before that, my belly button birthday is October the 7th, and my dad called me up to wish me happy birthday, and this was 3 days before I got sober, and he said, how's it going, son? I'm dying, Dad. I can't quit drinking. I can't quit shooting dope. You know, beating my old lady up. I wreck cars. I go to jail. I can't stay out of the courtroom. And my dad said, son, you got to do something about your drinking. He didn't say anything about anything else. He said, you got to do something about your drinking. Now, I'd tried from 1978 to 1980 to quit drinking, and I could quit, but I couldn't stay quit. I just couldn't stay quit. And that's, I think it's on page 24 where it says something to the effect of, for reasons yet obscure, the alcoholic is unable to bring into his consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the misery and suffering of a week or a month ago. He is without defense against the first drink. Some of the people were getting cakes. They were talking about people that quit going to meetings. That's what happens when you quit going to meetings. You forget. Because that's what always happened to me from 78 until 1980. I'd quit drinking, but then I'd forget that I quit drinking. So I'd have a drink, and then I remembered that I quit. But I had one, I might as well have a couple more. And off we go. You probably know the story. And that's why alcoholics that are done drinking, because that done drinking, that's a good sounding little deal, but you can get undone too. You can flat ass get undone. Quit going to meetings, quit sponsoring people, quit doing service commitments, and you'll get undone. You know, when I turned 30 years sober, I was having breakfast with my sponsor, which we have breakfast every Saturday. And when I turned 30, he said, okay, I got a new job for you. I said, okay, I'm up for it. I mean, when my sponsor tells me to do something, I do it. If you're not going to do what your sponsor tells you, why the hell do you have him as a sponsor? You know, if you're unwilling or can't do it or agree with what he's doing, fire his ass and get somebody you can follow the directions. But anyway, Sam told me, now that you're 30, I got a new job for you. I want you to help all the people that are 20 get to 30. That's a hell of a job. We lose a lot of people in that time frame between 20 and 30. And it's a good job to have. So if you're over 30, help those people 20 get to 30. It's worth it, you know. Anyhow, back to the thing about my dad, and I'd had a drunk driving ticket. Imagine that. It was my fourth one, and I got sentenced to a class out at the courthouse in El Cajon for 6 weeks, and I don't know, it's drunk driving, don't do it, or something. I don't know what it was. But there was a guy that gave that class. His name was Ken M. And he was the treatment director for the Drug and Alcohol Center over in Coronado, California. And about the second week I was there, it started to break through a little bit, this thing called alcoholism. And see, he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so during that entire 6 weeks, he never once told me what I had to do. He stuck to what he had done and what AA had done for him. He didn't tell me what AA would do for me. He told me what AA had done for him. And it caught my attention. It caught my attention. I think I went to half those classes without a drink. And when the 6 weeks was over, I got that little piece of paper. I graduated from this California class. And Ken was standing at the stairs of the courthouse going out, shaking people's hands and everything and saying, you know, I'm glad you were here and so on, all that stuff you got to do. And I shook his hand and I said, Ken, I want to thank you very much. You have absolutely changed my life. I know for absolute certain, because of you, that I'm an alcoholic and I'm never going to drink again. And this guy's about this high. And he says, well, that's good, but what are you going to do about all that rage and anger you got inside you? I wanted to just reach over and squeeze his head like a pimple. But I didn't. I said, well, thanks for the information. Didn't know that was in the book. I'd never read the book. So I walked on them steps and I said, I'm going to show that little short son of a bitch a thing or two. I ain't never going to drink again. When I haven't had a drink for a year, I'm going to come back here and I'm going to tell him exactly how I did it. And I walked down those steps full of confidence, full of information, full of some other stuff I won't mention. And I didn't have a drink for 3 days. And that went on and on and on for a couple years. I got to the point where I just couldn't stay stopped. I couldn't stay stopped. I didn't know anything about what I learned very early in Alcoholics Anonymous because the sponsor I had said, he opened the big book, he says, see this here, it's called The Doctor's Opinion. I want you to read it every day for 30 days and then tell me what you found in there. Because there's something in there I know that you don't know. And if you don't find out what I know, you're going to die drunk. I said, okay, I'll read it. So I read it and read it and read it and read it. And sure enough, I found out that we're a distinct entity of people and that when we introduce alcohol, booze, into our system, we develop a thing called the phenomena of craving. And now the drinking is drinking because we want to satisfy that phenomena. It's not because I want to. I drink against my will. I have no willpower once that whiskey's in there. I can't say no after one. I just can't. Because here's what really happens. When I have a drink of whiskey, I become a new man. You know what I mean? And the new man wants a drink. So the new man takes a drink, and the new man wants some reefer, some speed, and a hooker. And then I'm going to wreck a car and go to jail. I mean, that's just how it goes. If I was going to make something up, it would sound a lot better than that kind of shit, I'll tell you that. That's a true story, man. That's exactly what happened to me. So anyway, back to my talking to my dad. My dad told me I had to do something about whiskey, and this Ken M had been floating around up here in my head for a while now. And so I got off the phone with my dad and got the Yellow Pages out, back when they still had phone books and Yellow Pages and no cell phones or anyway. And I got the number for the Coronado Drug and Alcohol Rehab thing, and I called this Ken guy, and we made an appointment to come over there on the 9th of October, which I believe was a Thursday. And so I went over there, and I had a little time to kill before the appointment because the appointment was for 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was feeling a little hungry, so I went down to a really good place to have a sandwich. It's called the Pacers Strip Club. And you know the sandwich is going to be a winner when they take it out of that little cellophane bag and put it in a warmer. You know that's going to be a great sandwich. So I'm drinking a little bit of beer and taking a little bit of shots of whiskey. Julio walked in with some good dope. We're out by the dumpster smoking dope. And I'm playing pool. I'm gambling with this guy that I'd gambled with, shooting pool and other things for 10 years. And I missed a bank shot. And he said to me, he said, Steve, you're having trouble with bank shots today, huh? And I said, no, partner. Drugs and alcohol is my problem. Now, probably none of you have ever been in a strip joint, but that's not the normal conversation you have when you're in a strip joint. And I went back over to sit down, and I heard this voice. And it wasn't from inside. It was kind of in back of me. And it said, "That's right, Steve. That is your problem." Now, that is not my voice, because I don't talk to myself in the first person. That wasn't the voice of the devil, because he had me right where he wanted me. He wasn't going to give me any information. So it was some spiritual entity that talked to me and agreed with me that drugs and alcohol was my problem. I played a couple more games of pool, had a couple more beers and this and that. I looked at my watch and it was 3:20 in the afternoon. I got to be at Coronado by 4. I got to leave soon. And I'd had enough whiskey and tequila to think that maybe I overreacted calling this guy. So what I'll do is I'll call him on the phone and I'll tell him, "Hey, I got this big business deal that's breaking in and I got to go do it. I'll get back to you. We'll rearrange the appointment." And that sounded good, except I couldn't make the phone call from the strip joint because all the loud music and shit, and I didn't want this guy that I'd made an appointment with for my drug and alcohol problem to think I was in a bar. Made perfect sense to me. So I was going to walk across the street. There was a place called Shaky Pizza, and they still had payphones back in those days. And I was going to call them up from this payphone. So I'm getting ready to walk out the door and pull that off, and I hear this voice again, and it said, "No, go." And I went. I left. I went over to Coronado. And I'm talking with this director of the treatment thing, and he says, "What do you think about going to AA?" I said, "Why would I want to go to AA? You know, I came over here. I've isolated the problem. I've come up with a solution, and it's you, so fix me." And he says, "Well, why don't you, have you ever been to AA?" I said, "No." He says, "Well, why don't you give AA a try?" I said, "Why would I want to give AA a try?" He said, "AA has a real good record of helping people that can't stop drinking to stop drinking. That's why I think you ought to go to AA." And I said, "Well, I don't want to go to AA." And so he quotes this little thing out of the big book, which I haven't read yet. And he says, "It doesn't seem like a man of your obvious intelligence would practice contempt prior to investigation." I hadn't had so much whiskey, I didn't understand what that meant. I said, "Okay, asshole, are you daring me to go to a meeting?" He said, "Yes, asshole, I'm daring you to go to a meeting." And I said, "Okay, I'll go to one meeting. I'll go to one meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and next week I'll come back here and I'll tell you how the cow eats a cabbage in AA." That was October 9th. October 10th, I was sitting over there in a seat called Quiet Desperation on 30th Street. In my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't remember a whole lot what was said. But after the meeting, this guy came up to me and he said, "You're new in AA, right?" I said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" He said, "Well, you held your hand up at the beginning of the meeting." Well, that was a long time ago. And he says, "Do you have a big book?" I said, "I got a lot of big books. I got War and Peace, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich." He says, "No, no, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. We affectionately call it the big book. Do you have one of those?" And I went, "No, I do not." And he said, "Well, you should get one." I said, "Well, how much are they?" He says, $4. And I looked at him, I said, "You take a check?" And he looked at me and he goes, "Not from you." He says, "Let me buy you a big book." So he went over there and he bought a big book and came back and wrote this. He says, "When did you take your last drink?" I said, "Yesterday." So he wrote October 10th, 1980. He says, "That's your sobriety date. Take this book home and read it." And I said, "Okay, but how can I ever repay you?" He says, "I don't want to be repaid." He says, "I want you to have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "What's your name?" He said, "My name isn't important. What's important is that you get a book." I said, "Look, man, I like to pay my debts. How can I repay you?" I said, "Okay." He said to me, "Okay, I'll tell you how you can repay me. Take this big book home and read it. Go to some meetings, get sober, get a sponsor, you know, all the stuff we tell people." And he says, "And then, when you have enough money, you don't have to write a check. Buy some stumble bum like you a book, and we'll call it even." And I bought a lot of books in the last 38 years. And every time I think about this guy that taught me almost everything I needed to know about AA in 5 minutes. Because he was all about service. He was all about love. He was all about caring. He was all about the stuff that we need to be all about that we don't come here with, or I didn't come here with. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous brimming over with love and kindness and compassion. I came here a liar, cheat, and a thief, and it kept going for a while after I got sober. It didn't just stop. I thought I was doing real good when I remember at Lemon Grove, people used to, they'd be talking and say, "No, that's a lie." And then they'd say what they should have said. And I wanted so bad to be able to be that honest, but I could never pull it off. I'd tell a lie and I'd know it was a lie and I'd get in my car and say, "Oh, I won't tell it again." And then I'd tell it again. You know, it was just, I believe it was you that was saying, this is when you go from one spiritual level to another, it's tough. It is. It is tough. I mean, I had a burst in spiritual growth here not too long ago. And what I found out is that I caught up with a bunch of people I thought I was way ahead of. AA is a weird kind of place. And so, anyway, I've been sober for a while when I started this meeting called the Misfits. It's my home group. It's up in Escondido. What we do is we read the big book, 8 or 10 pages of it, and then we break into smaller groups because we got about 70 or 80 guys going there now. And we break into tables and have somebody that's not a facilitator, just leads the table. And makes sure if somebody starts being a runaway train, he tells them, "Okay, you know, you can tell the rest of that story next week." And we have a disclaimer that we recommend that the table leaders say that if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous and you haven't taken the step that we're presently studying, we ask you to pass and list to the brothers that have taken this step. Now, there's a good reason. We don't tell them what the good reason is, but the good reason for doing that. We are not particularly interested in your opinion of something you haven't done. I mean, there it is. We're there about recovery. Total, full recovery from alcoholism. Emotional recovery, physical recovery, spiritual recovery, recovery of all kinds. And that's what we're about. We have, in that group, we have sponsorship chains that if I were to stand up and say, you and you and me, we'll all stand up. And we stand up and says, "Now everybody that is sponsored by one of these four men, stand up. And anybody that's sponsored by anybody that's standing up, stand up." Pretty soon, almost half the meeting is standing up. We have strong sponsorship change. We have strong emphasis on the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read them every week, not once a month. The traditions are for the group, but the steps are for the individual. I mean, what the traditions really do is they save Alcoholics Anonymous from us. Huh? That's what the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous do. It saves us from us. They're good things. My dear lovely wife came down with me tonight. I think she booked an engagement. She's a far better speaker than I am, so I recommend you come and listen to her. She's dynamite. You know what? I think I'm done. I know I'm supposed to talk longer than this. Who said that? But I invite you to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous until in your heart you can feel what Dr. Martin Luther King said. I'm free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. God bless you, and thanks for having me.
I'd like to thank Steve, and please come back and visit us. Hey, Steve. I'd also like to thank the residents of the House and the Women's Auxiliary for a great dinner. Yay. Now let's circle up and close with the Lord's Prayer.